You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Dr. Melody Fox, and Alan Cardoza is not going to be with us today because he is doing a teen recovery. For as many of you know, that when teens run away, there are a great many people out there who will prey upon them, and Alan is helping one family get their runaway teen back this morning. We wish him well on his rescue, and we do expect him back to join us next week. As each week, we'll bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain. We'll bring you options to raising the quality of life for the whole family. We address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And with having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, today we've got two guests joining us today. A little bit later in our show, we'll be talking to Shane Gallagher. He is the CEO and founder of Wingate Wilderness Therapy Program up in Utah. But first, we have a fabulous guest. Our guest today is Dr. Les Parrott. He is a New York Times number one best-selling author. He is a co-founder, along with his wife, Leslie, of the Center of Relationship Development on the campus of Seattle Pacific University. He is also the author of such books as High Maintenance Relationships, Love Talk, 3 Seconds, The Hour That Matters Most, and an award-winning Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. Dr. Parrott is a sought-after speaker and holds relationship seminars across North America, and he has also been featured in USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times, and his many television appearances include The View, The O'Reilly Factor, CNN, Good Morning America, and The Oprah Show. And Les lives in Seattle along with his wife and 2 sons, and we're very, very pleased to have him today, as in his book, the new book, You're Stronger Than You Think, he talks about how you could access the power to do what you can't, what you feel you can't. And he has a lot of practical insights and hard-earned wisdom, and he shows you that by changing how you think, understanding what you feel, and using the power that lies untapped deep in your soul, you can summon strength you didn't know you had, and strength that ultimately comes from God. Now, the secret to tapping into your inner strength is not about positive thinking or pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And what he's talking about is about leveraging your strengths and overcoming your weaknesses to reveal that surprising inner power that God has placed within your heart, and using counterintuitive approach to overcoming hardship in your Stronger Than You Think may help you find that unexpected power you need to pass through both the everyday and extraordinary tests of life. So, Dr. Parrott, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, thanks. Wow, that's an exhausting introduction. I think you've listed everything in my life. Appreciate that.
Well, you've done some extraordinary things. And I know I talked briefly before we went on the air about how much I love your book, You're Stronger Than You Think, The Power to Do What You Feel You Can't. I recommend it and have recommended it to several of my clients in my private practice, and they love this book.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, this is a book that is my latest in a string of books that I wrote, and I wanted to mention to you, I don't know if you're aware, my very first book I wrote was called Helping the Struggling Adolescent, and I just saw a huge need, this is 20 years ago, a huge need for help in that area, and that's why I'm so thrilled to be on your programs now. I know you have a huge, compassionate heart for those teenagers out there and those that care for them, so it's great to be with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and we love having you here. Now, you've written so many books, and I'm going to have to go out and pick up your very first book. Could you say the title of that again?
Well, yeah, it's actually been revised and updated, but the original title was Helping the Struggling Adolescent, and now it's in 2 versions that have been updated and expanded. It looks at the 30 most common problems that kids have these days, and so, as you know, that that changes, and so it's now in a huge volume that's for youth workers and counselors and therapists, and it has all kinds of self-tests and stuff. And then there's a parent's edition called Helping Your Struggling Teenager. So,
Well, that's great. And maybe we can have you back and talk about that.
That'd be fun.
Point. But today we're talking about You're Stronger Than You Think. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, you know, I also work with a lot of college students. I teach at Seattle Pacific University, and it just seemed to me like even at this at the cusp of a great adventure of living, some of these students would get bogged down. And I'm not talking about, you know, like depression and significant things that might really put somebody on the sidelines. I'm just talking about a person kind of looking out at their future and realizing that too often, even on the front end, their hopes were deferred because, you know, oh, I can't do that now, but maybe someday when XYZ happens. Or their hopes were dashed because of, you know, whatever, anything from the economy to not being able to get a job. And I began to speak a little bit about that, lecture and do some research, and then I began to realize, wow, this is a message not just for college students. This applies to all of us. And so many of us, you know, we live on this, we kind of look out, survey the landscape of our life, and we think, someday I'm going to start living. You know, someday I'm going to quit putting everything on hold and really go for my dreams. And that was really the catalyst for writing this.
Wow. I mean, it's just so extraordinary. And you know, I'm sitting here as you're talking, and I'm looking at the front of your book. You have like a C-clamp, you know, something that kind of holds something in place, and you have an egg in there.
Yeah, almost like a little vice. And I told the publisher, I said, I know that it's not really the author's position to just tell you what should be on the cover, but I got an idea. And described that to a room full of about 12 people at the publishing house in Chicago, and they all got it immediately, because one of the things we know about the egg, this common household food item, is that we treat it with such care, and, you know, we put it in a special area in the grocery, and we put it in these cartons, and, oh, watch out, that bag has, you know, the eggs in it, put it on the top, you know, be careful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, the egg is far stronger than you might imagine. It holds up to 300 pounds of pressure when it's positioned end to end. And so we thought, that's a pretty good symbol for this whole concept of being stronger than you really think you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a very, very significant symbol that you do have on there, because, you know, we are stronger than we think. And I think we get caught up in our depression and other things by thinking about how fragile we are and how we're going to break down. But we really have that inner strength. And so when you talk about our inner strength resides inside us, and you also talk about God and faith and how that fits into the picture, how do you see that fitting into the picture?
Well, it's all about, first of all, kind of reframing our perspective, because we think, oh, I can't do that. That, you know, that's for other people to do. And in fact, the very first few pages of the book, I describe an experience with a friend of mine. His name is Bill, and he was telling me at a restaurant about this little movie promo that he saw while he was on a flight on an airplane, and he started crying. I thought he was joking around, because he's not the kind of guy that, you know, cries openly, and, mm-hmm. and he was weeping on an airplane, and it was for Where the Wild Things Are, and it said, inside all of us is hope, and inside all of us is fear, and inside all of us is adventure. And he said, you know, as silly as it sounds, he said, that little movie promo just reminded me that I'm not living my adventure. I don't want to wake up someday with a bunch of regret and realize that I played it safe, that I didn't go for it, that I didn't live my great adventure, that I didn't climb the mountain I wanted to, that I didn't, you know, leap over that chasm that stands between me and what I want to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm talking about, is summoning the strength to do just that, to quit putting life on hold, and to find that strength deep within you, because we all have it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that egg that looks like it should be so fragile, we're all stronger than we think we are when we really live out these counterintuitive principles that I talk about in the book.
Yeah, so what keeps us from living the lives that we're longing for, and that, you know, and how will these principles that you talk about in the book help with that?
Well, I think if you want to kind of paint a big brushstroke that's pretty broad, it would be two things, and that is deferred hope, that we think, you know, and by the way, this is all about the stuff that's outside of our comfort zone. That's where the true adventure begins, right? When we step outside our comfort zone. And so many of us defer that because it's not the right time, or I need to get this done first, or I need to, you know, reach this goal first or whatever it is until I can really start living. I think it was Abraham Maslow that said some people spend their entire lives indefinitely preparing to live. And so that's one reason, is that we defer it. The other is that life gives us a left curve. We didn't see it coming. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was an illness. It was a financial jolt. It was a relational breakup and sting and bruise or whatever it is. And so we kind of just didn't see life handing us that kind of a deck of cards. And so, again, our hope is dashed. Those are the two categories that really keep us from tapping into the strength we didn't know we had.
Hmm. So in your book, what are some of the insights that you give in?
Well, I categorize three areas in the book, and I call them the power of your mind, the power of your heart, and the power of your soul. Each one of these has two action steps, a call to action. For example, under the power of your mind, the first one is to think simply. Why? Well, because there's strength in clearing your head. How many times have you overthought an issue? And it just kind of stymied you. It just kind of, you know, caused you to freeze up because you were overthinking. In fact, I was in Chicago this past weekend at a speaking engagement. I talked to this guy who said, you know, I read that first chapter. He said, that's all I needed was that first chapter. He said, I have been so stuck over a situation, and it involved his love life. He lost his wife to cancer 3 years ago, and he is just overthinking everything about his future on relationships right now to the point that he is stuck in a rut. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this first chapter is all about, is thinking simply, clearing your mind so you don't fall victim to that mind fog and you can see clearly again.
Well, and I think that's really, really important. And a lot of people with anxiety are overthinking about things and ruminate on things. And so when you could clear your head, think simply, put it in context and make it in, like, I guess, more digestible thoughts or think of things in ways that are more simplified, that you know you can do this.
Well, yeah, and it's not even about it's a head game that we play with ourselves, like, oh, don't worry about that, you know, kind of stuff. Our biology actually changes the glucose level in our brain, literally, and we know this from research, literally causes us to not see things as clearly when we overthink. So it's almost like a literal mind fog. Our brain gets clouded when we overthink things. Mm-hmm. So it's really powerful, and that's what I didn't want this to be a book of armchair psychology. I wanted it to really, what do we know for sure? What do we know truly works? And so when you can begin to think clearly, when you can clear your head and see things, you know, in more vivid detail, you can make wiser choices. And that's what life is all about, is making good choices. You know, it's what it comes down to.
Right. And also in your book, you talk about thinking expectantly, that there's strength in anticipation. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, this is about hope, or what psychologists would call optimism. And again, we know this. Boy, Martin Seligman, one of the most famous living psychologists these days, did a tremendous piece of work when he began to uncover the power of not just thinking positively. You know, that's kind of almost a cliche. Think positive, but this is really deeper than that. This is about summoning the strength that is found in looking out at the world and expecting the best. Because when you expect the best, when you think expectantly, good things begin to happen. And again, that kind of sounds like armchair psychology, but there's so much research to back this up. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would recommend to anybody that's listening to us right now is even ask them, what are they expecting out of this day? Most of us don't give much thought to that. What are you expecting out of this week? You know, when it comes to what you would really like, what can you expect out of this year? What can you expect out of the remaining months of this year? What can you expect from that? Those are where your dreams reside, and so you've got to get in touch with that, mm-hmm. because that's when you begin to start living the life you love.
Yeah, and I think it also goes to that unconscious level. Once you think about what you expect and what you hope to get done this year, then you start making decisions and putting things into action that will help you towards that goal.
Yeah, and it starts by seeing that, you know, having that mental picture of what's out there, what life what does it hold for me? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, I can't even remember who said it, but the saying is, hope is faith holding out its hand in the dark. Mm-hmm. You can't always see clearly, but if you can begin to shed a little bit of light on what might be out there, just a few paces in front of you, it's amazing how that begins to help you rise up. I think about even the people on the East Coast having to basically rebuild their lives, you know. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for them to see beyond all the tatters, all the ruin that they're facing right now. But if they can, when they begin to put their hand out into the dark and go, okay, you know, we can rise up, we can make a new life again, that's when hope is born, that's when dreams are begun.
Wow. And I think also that goes right along with that. I know you talk about heart, but let's jump to soul for a moment.
Okay.
How does soul play a part? And I know you talk about open yourselves up to hear God's still small voice. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, this is kind of the deepest part of the book, because this is, when we talk about the soul, we're talking about something that we can't x-ray, you know, you can't measure it, you can't locate it and say, okay, let's take this out and look it over. But we know deep within us, our spirit holds a majestic power, the power of our soul. And so the last third of the book is devoted to that. And one of the action steps here is what I call be emptied, because there's strength in surrender. Now, this is about as counterintuitive as you can get when it comes to a book on strength. And I'm saying, hey, raise up the white flag and surrender. That doesn't sound too empowering. But what I'm talking about is surrender to this idea that you can do this on your own. Surrender to this idea that says, I'm going to show everybody I can do this, because that attitude, well, it can be empowering, isn't the whole story. We need other people in our lives to do that. And so our soul has to be in tune with that. And it's amazing what begins to happen in our lives when we begin to relinquish that. I use the illustration in the book. I remember seeing this in a park in Singapore some time ago. I was doing a series of lectures there, and they took me over to this park in the city where all these monkeys run wild. And one of the ways they capture monkeys is to put something in a trap, or even just think of a common jar that's big enough for them to get their hand in, put a banana in that. They reach down in there and hold it. They won't let go of that banana. They won't let go of it, and so they're connected to that jar that's tethered to something else. And we do that same thing. We just won't let go of this desire to say, hey, I don't need anybody. I can do this on my own. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, of course, we're draining ourselves of the power that we can find when we relinquish it and let God begin to empower us, for example.
Yeah, and we do that. We hold on to a thought or an idea that isn't serving us and is not helping us and keeps us from moving forward, but for some reason we won't let go of, say, that banana in that jar so we could release ourselves to move forward. And that is really, really important. So, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the soul, how does that also work and correlate with seeing beyond the walls and having that faith, and why would that be so important? Because I know you talk about that in the book.
Yeah, that's nearly the last chapter, just before the conclusion in the book. And I say, be bold, because there's strength in taking risks. And again, this is something that few of us really want to hear when we're feeling like our hopes are dashed and or deferred, because taking the risk is the last thing on our mind. But the book is really progressive, and so when you get to this place, and by the way, I should mention, along the way in the book, there are some self-tests that mm-hmm. people can do, and there's an online assessment. This has been one of the funnest things about this book for me as an author, is that I hear from people almost daily that are taking the self-assessment that goes along with this, that helps them, you know, as it were, to almost x-ray their level of strength in these three areas. And this last one, when they get to this and they begin to measure, wow, how am I at taking risks? How am I at being bold and finding the strength in reaching out? In fact, I have a friend who's a mountain climber. I was talking with him yesterday afternoon, and he was saying, I was hiking with my son, or not even hiking, it was, you know, scaling the side of a rock wall here in, outside of Seattle where we live. And he said, we got to this place of what these mountain hikers call the airy leap, And he said his son was ready to go for it. He said, I couldn't do it. It was about 4 feet of straight into a flat granite, you know, side of a mountain. And with the right tools, I guess these climbers can do that. And he said, I wasn't about to do that. And he said, you know, his son was like, that's okay, Dad, you know, that's all right. But I'm ready. I want to take this leap. And talk about a risk. Well, we face the same thing in our lives. Mm-hmm. We don't want to take that airy leap. You know, that looks too frightening. And so I'm going to sit it out this round. And that's okay. We can do that. But there comes a time when we will only realize our dreams when we step out of our comfort zone and go to the edge of our comfort zone and take that leap, take that airy leap, and find that that's where life begins.
And also taking that leap requires, I think, faith.
Absolutely.
You can move forward and
it means faith in ourselves. It means faith in a higher power to help us get through that. It means faith in our fellow friends that they're going to be there for us as well. And life is a big risk, you know, but why not live it boldly?
Yeah, and also part of that risk is making yourself vulnerable. And I know you talk about how pride gets in the way sometimes of vulnerability. So how does being vulnerable make us stronger?
Yeah, again, very counterintuitive, but there's strength in owning your weakness. There, you know, most of us kind of want to wear this facade to look stronger than we really are. Mm-hmm. And so we wear a mask interpersonally, and I forget who said that we're like jellyfish in armor, you know, and on the exterior, we can look so tough, and inside we're just like this big marshmallow. And if we begin to show that to people and say, you know something, I'm feeling really anxious about this. I'm feeling really insecure about this. It's amazing how vulnerability begets vulnerability, because when you begin to reveal your insecurities, that person next to you that you're revealing them to goes, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I feel the same way. And then you begin to enjoy some community, and that's where strength is found. That's kind of the precursor to that kind of community, is to own your strength and embrace that vulnerability.
Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about the soul, and we talked about the mind. Talk a little bit about the heart in your book.
So the heart, that's where this vulnerability resides, is in the heart. And, you know, my little 10-year-old boy, for Halloween that we recently celebrated, dressed up as the Tin Man, and from the Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And he's read, I didn't even know this till he started reading, but I guess there's like 12 or 13 books, not just the one that we are all familiar with from the movie. But so I've learned a lot about the Tin Man, and I put a quote in here at the beginning of this section on the heart that says, once I had brains and a heart also, so having tried them both, I would much rather have a heart. Mm-hmm. There is great power in the human heart. And, of course, we talk about the heart in figurative terms, but this is where we begin to really reveal our heart. You know, that's what vulnerability is all about. It's also where we begin to get connected, heart-to-heart connections, we call them, mm-hmm. right? And my heart goes out to you, or my heart aches. And so that analogy really captures this concept of the vulnerability as well as the connection that we build with other people, where we find strength that we didn't know we had.
Yeah, and what are some of the results of drawing all that strength when you combine the mind, the heart, and the soul? And what have you seen in your own life?
Well, one of the things that I hear a lot from people is, after reading this book, is, you know something, I realized in my life I was playing it safe. Every day was the same. I was stuck in a rut, and I was just kind of walking through my day always thinking, hey, someday it's going to be different for me. Mm-hmm. And I realized, hey, that day needs to be now. I can't keep putting this off. That's been very encouraging to me as an author. That was one of the goals I had for this book, is that people would quit playing it safe, would start to live more boldly, and to go after those things that they strive for, and really let the adventure begin. It was Helen Keller that said, life is either a great adventure or nothing at all. And so that was one of the big goals, and probably one of the most satisfying things to hear.
Yeah, and in your book, you have this wonderful poem. I hope you don't mind if I read it, but It's in the beginning of the book, saying, waiting for your life to start someday. But in there it says, each morning he stacked up the letters he'd write tomorrow. And think of the folks he would fill with delight tomorrow. It was too bad indeed that he was busy today and hadn't a minute to stop on his way. More time he would have to give others, he'd say, tomorrow. The greatest workers this man would have been tomorrow. And the world would have known him had he ever seen tomorrow. But the fact is, he died and he faded from view, and all that was left here when living was through was the mountain of things he intended to do tomorrow. And I thought that was so profound when I read that in your book, and it just made me stop and think of all the things I put off until tomorrow. I've good intentions and I'm going to do it someday, but you know, we forget to live today.
Right. Yeah, that is so true, and to live in the here and now. And I got to tell you, I can sometimes be guilty of the reverse of it, and that is living in the there and then, thinking about the future so much. You know, that's also a deadly trap. The key is to in fact, there was an old James Taylor song that said, the secret of life is living in this moment of time. And it really is. When we can be present-oriented, when we can focus on the here and now rather than the there and then, rather than the past, life becomes a great adventure.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I like so much about your book, because it really puts things in perspective and gets you to think about that. And then it does go take you step by step to really think about how you think about things and learning to think more simply and with expectation, and then the heart, and then getting into the soul. And I do love all those little self-exploration things that you put in the book. I don't know what you call it, not exams, but you know,
little self-tests and assessments.
Yeah.
And yeah, we at the end of each of these sections, we have a little portion that is kind of even the colors of the pages in the book are different, and it's making it real, we call it. And it's how to leverage the power that you've just read about. How do you do that in real practical terms? You know, there's nothing worse than being reading a book and thinking, oh, I want to do that, but what do I actually do? Well, we actually provide an action plan for you in this book. And like I said, the other thing is an assessment. And then one other component that even goes with this book is we have a workbook that has all kinds of applications for it. And, you know, you've noticed in the table of contents that one of the things I say in The Power of the Heart is to feel connected, because there's strength in being known.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really, the call to action there is to start what I suggest is a strength group. And this is a group of people in your life that you pull together for a dedicated purpose, maybe for a short term, maybe for the long term. I'll tell you this, I dedicated this book to my strength group, which I meet with every other Tuesday. I'll meet with them tomorrow. And these guys are dedicated to living the great adventure. And we keep each other somewhat accountable, but what we really focus on are the 5% pieces of our life that we don't talk about pretty much to anybody else, and that is the bottom 5% and the top 5%. And when you have people like that in your life, wow, you really do begin to summon strength, because there's strength in being known.
Yeah, and to be able to really pick and choose who you surround yourself by, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and that's why a strength group is so intentional. Let's say you just have four other people that you know you're committed to, and that's why we provided this workbook to go along with the book. They can actually go through that together, and it's not just about the book, it's about finding that strength together.
Right, exactly. And that's why this book is so powerful, and everything that you have in here is so powerful. You're stronger than you think, the power to do what you feel you can't. And it's got all these great tools and everything else. And what website should people go to get more information?
Yeah, they can go to our main website, which is lessandleslie.com. And my wife's name is Leslie. We write a lot of books together, so that's the name, lessandleslie.com. And they can find a link there to all kinds of things related to this book that we're talking about, You're Stronger Than You Think. And it's also where they'll find the assessment for it as well.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, I do want to thank you, Dr. Les Parrott, for joining us today on Answers for the Family. You're stronger than you think. If you'd like more information, we'll also have it on our website, www.answersforthefamilyblog. That's the numeral for thefamilyblog.com. And we do thank you for joining us today. I'm sorry it was such a short time. We could spend hours talking with you regarding this subject. And I think we would like to get you back at some point to talk about your other book, the first book you wrote, Helping the Struggling Adolescents as well at some point.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the great work you do. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, and have a wonderful day. And we're going to be right back with more Answers for the Family in just a couple moments. So stand by, and we'll be talking to Shane Gallagher with Wingate Wilderness Therapy Program. Stand by with more Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers to the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. Alan Cardozo is out rescuing a teen today, which is what he does best, and we're glad he's doing that. I wish him much success in that. Our other guest today is Shane Gallagher. He has over 22 years as either a direct care staff, trainer, program developer, and executive director of Wilderness Therapy Programs for at-risk teens. Now, Shane is on the short list of one of the most experienced individuals in the history of outdoor behavioral health care industry. So Shane has also acquired a deep understanding of the innate therapeutic effects of wilderness experience in the lives of young people, including those effects that contribute to self-esteem in a teen's life. Shane, along with his wife Sherry, are the parents of 6 children, all of which were teenagers at one time or another. And Shane is currently executive director of Wingate Wilderness Therapy up in Utah. And Shane, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm excited that you're here to talk to us today. And, you know, we mentioned in your intro there about working with teens and helping to raise the level of self-esteem, especially in the wilderness programs. How does that work with that?
Well, you know, a wilderness program can do a lot of things. One of the things that it does, in my opinion, one of the central things that it does is it helps this very subject that we're talking about raise a young person's sense of who they are, of how worthy they are as an individual, as a person on this planet and in this life. And there's different ways that occurs. You know, we get kids who come to us, and they're at different levels of feeling just not good about themselves. I mean, some have substance abuse issues, some have depression issues, there's different systemic, you know, family kind of issues going on, abuse even, and you walk away or you walk in that as a young person just trying to figure out who you are. But on the subject of this topic, you don't feel good about yourself. I mean, I can't even count the amount of times I have been out there in the field. We get a new kid, and they're either acting out angrily because they don't feel good about who they are, or they're acting in depression or just being quiet or even suicidal ideation and based largely, not entirely, but largely on just how they see themselves. Mm-hmm. And, gosh, out in the wilderness, you encounter the sorts of things that, in my opinion, bring a person a sense of self-esteem, a mm-hmm. sense of self-worth, a sense of sort of knowing their place in society and life and their family and amongst those people that are around them. I think a big piece has to do with accomplishing something they couldn't they didn't think they could do. And that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know, if you're in a wilderness program, you make fire actually using sticks on no matches, you know, a Bodrill fire set. It's very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And kids just light up. You know, a lot of them, we've seen Boy Scout troops walk by our groups who are making fires with sticks, and they're astounded. And that's sort of a central theme in Boy Scouts. They don't know how to do that. And it's something that it was outside of the realm of what you thought you could do, and you do it, and you realize, wait a minute, not only can I do this, I can do other things. And then there's this sense of awe, sense of wonder, a sense that there's power in the simplicity in nature, and I'm actually out there in it, part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can slow down, listen to my own voice. You know, in my opinion, and what I've seen out there is the kids, they come from a lot of noise, and there's a lot of value in their own wisdom and in their own voice that's down deep in there. They get a chance to listen to it.
Yeah, because they can't access it with all the chaos going on in their life a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's no time to just reflect on what I think as an individual and who I am. Mm-hmm. And a wilderness experience provides time for that. And then I've got a group of kids that are around me, and somewhere during my experience, I notice maybe that somebody's struggling in a hike, and I take part of their load. Well, obviously, that's a neat thing to do physically, but you can see the metaphor embedded in that as well. I can help somebody. Mm-hmm. I have a worth outside of my own body and outside of my own mind. I can be of service, and people can begin to appreciate me. And that's coming from my own choices. So they have this opportunity, not just every day, several times a day, because you're living in this group in the middle of, you know, the wilderness, and you rely on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way not to rely on people and be relied upon. Yeah. And as I do that, I begin to, again, to see that, wait a minute, I can contribute. I have something of worth that somebody else appreciates.
Go ahead. I was going to say, as you were talking, I was thinking that also goes the other way, that I could allow somebody else to help me. I don't have to do it by myself.
Yes. And not only that, they like helping me. It's not burdensome, for them to help me. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, that must mean that I am worthy of that too. You know, it's okay to be helped. It's okay to ask. And people like doing that. Look at me, you know. I'm okay, and I can begin to even be more okay.
Yeah,
letting yourself, it's a very good point, Melody, letting yourself be served is often as important as being serving.
Well, I found that too, like in friendships, a friendship goes back and forth. You can't be the one that's always giving. You have to be able to receive as well.
Yeah. No, I agree with that, and it's... as you begin to accept that help. And the kids I see out in the field, they become more open.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that openness is a two-way street.
Yeah.
So if I feel more open to those around me, they're helping me, I'm open to that, and then now I begin to add, and I help them. And this reciprocal relationship is what builds the sense of self for both individuals.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just curious, they find their voice, per se, let's say, out in the wilderness. How do they hold on to that when they go back to the chaos of where they came from?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I tell you, sometimes there is, they go up and down the graph, if you will. You know, they fall down and then get back up again. I have heard, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, a lot of the kids I worked with many years ago are now adults. Some of them have children. And a lot of them have come back to me and said, you know, I went to the wilderness, it was really great. I got back home and, you know, I struggled. I had, you know, this challenge and that challenge. But I always had that sort of like, not a light at the end of the tunnel necessarily, but a light that now is always with me in the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I have this memory of how I did feel and the things that were taught to me and the relationships I did have and how I did help people. And that was just sort of this thing that I could, at any point, I could go back and grab a hold of. And then I finally did, and I started to get myself back on track. And I think that's actually a very natural human experience. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us as adults are, it's not, we're not just on this trajectory up and up and up and up. Progress looks a little bit mountainous, you know, on the graph sometimes, mm-hmm. up and down. And but when they have that ability, that memory, in some cases, they've never had that before. They've never had such powerful experiences to reflect back upon. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's something that you can always have access to because it's part of your life now. I had that experience.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to be able to almost like have a bank account, if you will, of good experiences that you can draw upon when you're going through a tough time to go, you know what, I was in a tough position before, I got through it, I was able to make fire, I was able to stay warm, I was able to hike that cliff, be
right.
successful in ways of survival, and if I could get through that, I could get through anything else life has to throw at me.
Yeah. You know, I had one young lady, she told me the story, this was years after she was a student in Wilderness. She said, I was in my parents' station wagon, and I had a certain amount of heroin in the car. And she said, and I can't remember how much it was, but it was enough to die from, if I remember right. She said, I could either turn right, which would be going to pick up my friend and then head to the city and get loaded, or I could go left, and which would be going back to where my dad worked and just sort of basically tell him this is what I'm going through. And she goes, I realized that I was on this path, and it had these two choices. She goes, and out in the wilderness, you people always were talking about the paths and choices, and you could go left or right. She goes, I literally saw myself as though I was on, like in somebody's drawing, explaining it to me, this girl can go right or go left. Mm-hmm. And she said, I had that memory, and I turned left.
Yeah.
And this girl now has a doctorate in anthropology, and the friend that she was going to pick up that she didn't pick up is married. Her husband has a master's degree in counseling, and they have a gaggle of children.
Wow.
So, you know, there's these moments, and you hear those kinds of stories all the time. I had a deep experience in it. I may not have been the perfect after that. I may have fallen down a lot, but I had that to reach back to. And in some cases, they just, you know, they have the wilderness experience and then just keep going and never look back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not all of us have the same journey.
Oh, sure. Now, when they come in, and we're talking about self-esteem, where, like between a scale of between 1 and 10, 10 being everything's perfect self-esteem, feeling good about themselves and the world around them and just going for it, and 0 being like no self-esteem whatsoever, what level are they usually when they come in, you know, if there's a like a certain area, and where would they find themselves by the time they leave, do you think?
You know, it's so unbelievably dramatic. I'm going to call 0 wishing I was dead.
Okay.
I don't want to be too intense, but we literally have 0s coming through the door.
Sure.
And then I would say we have some 2s, not much more higher than maybe a 3 or 4 coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's just really quite, relatively speaking, it's pretty mild what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
But so they come in, I mean, literally, they're not worthy of being loved. They don't respect themselves. They're directionless. They're sort of, I don't know, just disconnected. And then, or maybe depression is going on, or like I said, anger. I mean, they're down, certainly on the other side of 3 most of the time. They don't want to talk to anybody. Their hair's in their face. And very rarely do you have them come in saying, I'm really looking forward to this. I'm so glad I get to come to this wilderness program. You know, usually it's the other way around, where somebody like Alan has tracked them down, saved them from something, and then they show up on our doorstep the next day. And they have this journey in front of them that they don't really want to be in, and they don't feel good about who they are.
Right.
And then by the end, I would say, you know, haven't done a study on this scale, but I would say they leave at 8s and 9s.
Mm-hmm.
They leave, and some of them, you know, even at 10s, like, I literally can take on the world. I am a person of worth. People believe in me. My family believes in me. I believe in my family. And that's even with those who come from families that really have struggled. You know, we have a lot of kids with parents that have addiction problems, or there's divorces and things like that. But kids, can have a perspective on that too. Like, you know, my parents aren't perfect. They're people too. And I hope that they always love me regardless of what I do, and I'm going to do the same thing back. Mm-hmm. And feeling that way about people helps you feel better about yourself too. You know? I remember, you know, we take a picture of our kids when they come in, just a still shot as part of their file, and we typically give that picture back to them when they leave. And one girl was here in our office at the very end of her stay, and we gave her that picture, and she looked at it just sort of like with this just stillness. Mm-hmm. And then she walked outside. Her mom went to go get in their car, and we were looking through the windows, which we do sometimes as they're leaving and they're hugging each other and whatever. And she lifted up this picture and showed her mom, and then she said, "Mom, I don't ever want to be that person again." And she tore it up, like tore it into little eraser-sized pieces right there. Wow. In the parking lot, and, you know, it flew away in the breeze.
Sure.
And that was, you know, an example of this girl who's smiling and happy and looking at a picture of a drab, depressed, hair in her face, I hate the world photograph. And she knew it. And she knew she wasn't that person anymore.
So what do you think are some of the contributing factors related to this apparent change in the view of themselves and their self-worth and everything?
Well, you know, it's I think there's probably two main categories. One is you have, I call it an outside of oneself experience. So these are the sort of things that people or things sort of do to you, if you will. And they could be negative, which contributes, I think, to low self-esteem. And it can be positive, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, positive, and we're talking about the positive side. So the positive side would be things like people saying, "Hey, thanks," or "Will you please help me?" Or you're hiking in the wilderness and you see this mountain range and you think that's wonderful, things like that. But more importantly, I have an opportunity hour by hour, minute by minute in a wilderness experience, mm-hmm. to have my what's inside of me, my internal voice, take over. So inside of oneself factors. So for example, I'm sitting around a fire, and the fire's kind of low, and the wood's closer to me than it is to anybody else. And right before somebody gets up to walk over to where the wood is, I grab it and put a log on the fire. Now, that doesn't seem like a very complicated thing, but this might be coming from a child who they don't even remember a time when they had a sense to do something for somebody, sort of without asking, and then they do it. And then somebody goes, "Oh, hey, thanks." And that's number one. That's mm-hmm. that's one tick on the marker, on the monitor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later that day they're hiking and somebody's, you know, starting to trip, and you steady them up too. Later that night people are talking about family in general, and you mention, "You know what, I got a letter from my mom yesterday, and this is what it said, and I feel really happy about that."
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 or 5 ticks on the marker now. It goes on and on and on. I have a chance to get outside of myself,
mm-hmm.
To forgive, to find friends, to know what friends are all about, to challenge myself, and to just be in a sense of peace, and to appreciate everything around me. And as all that happens, in my opinion, you know, that's going on around them, they just start to feel a sense of, maybe you could call it sort of a oneness, like, "I belong here."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I belong in life, in the world. My family is, you know, humanity, and this group that's around me, around the fire, when before, I may have felt like everybody is against me.
Right.
And so this, if I do what I know that my own inside is telling me is the right thing to do, and I do that, I feel good. And then I do it again, and I feel better. I do it again, and I feel better. And pretty soon you get used to that. And their monitor now is positive, and then only every now and then they're feeling negative about their wilderness life experience with this group of people, with the staff, with the therapist, with the, you know, with nature. And a big piece of it is in my communication with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get kids and children. I mean, sorry, you'll get children and parents who live together in the same house but hardly talk, and now they have to write very intentional letters back and forth to each other, and then they spend time actually in the wilderness as well with each other, and then they visit each other again at the end, and there's communication that has never, ever happened, that both parties wanted to have happen, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big piece as well, just getting closer to the people that I already want to get closer to and love.
And I think that's so important. And unfortunately, our time is just about up here.
I know.
We only had a few minutes today, but I think your program is wonderful. And I just know how I feel when I get up to the mountains to get some fresh air and out in the wilderness away from the chaos of city life. It just brings a calmness, too. And I think it does slow you down, and you can get more in touch with what's going on inside and not get so caught up in everything else. And what I like is sitting down and having them write the letters to their family members and having their families write back. And it's not these texts and little curt little sayings back and forth. It's actually well thought out and from the heart.
Yes.
And that makes the communication
exactly
and that strength and that family unit so much more. So I want to thank you, Shane, for being with us today. We're talking to Shane Gallagher. He is basically in charge over at Wingate Wilderness Therapy Program. And if people want more information about your wilderness program, how can they reach you, or what's your website?
You know, they can just get on wingatetherapy.com and they can know anything they want to know.
And it's spelled Wingate, Wingate.
Yep, wingatetherapy.com.
That sounds great. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I mean, it was only a short period of time, but we really appreciate you being with us today on Answers for the Family. Keep up the good work out there.
Well, I really appreciate it, Melody, and all the work that you all do as well. I've known Alan for a while, and there's just really important things that y'all are doing. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Take care and be well.
And bye-bye.
Bye for now. We'll be back with more Answers for the Family next week. Please join us then with Alan Cardoza and myself, Dr. Melody Fox. Take care.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.